Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Track. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This week on Track, we have an interview with an athlete fresh from competing at the Olympic Marathon Trials in Kew Gardens. Clara Evans ran a huge PB in the trials event, running a time of 2:32.42, finishing in fifth place. Clara, who runs for Cardiff AC and who also has set a new 10k PB in the last few weeks, sat down and talked all things running with Robbie and gave us an insight into the Olympic trials. Next week, we will also have a special interview with Frank Baddick, who also ran in the trials race and completed the distance in a time of 2:15. Before the interview, we will discuss the Olympic Marathon trials, where we saw amazing performances and wins from Stephanie Davis of Clapham Chasers and fans' favourite Chris Thompson of Aldershot, Farnham and District. We also look ahead to some upcoming races, including the Podium 5K and the Comeback 5000 metres. And we also cover the latest news in the running world. As always, I'm joined by Kat, George and Robbie. George, how have you been the last week or so?
Yeah, all good, thank you. Home for Easter for a month from university. Training pretty well, getting ready for track season now, really. So not doing the half marathon I was hoping to do in the spring. I'll leave that until September, I think, and get ready for the track, which looks like it's going to be relatively normal. So, yeah, all good. Thank you.
And have you managed to book onto any track races yet?
Yeah, I've entered, I think, three BMC Grand Prix 5,000 metres in like May and June. First one's on the 8th of May, I think. So hopefully that or the University of Birmingham do an open meet on the 12th of May, another 5,000. So hopefully a 5K next month or so.
Very good. And hopefully a PB?
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, definitely. Because my track PB is from 2019, so definitely looking to update that and hopefully get into the mid-14s, I suppose, with the aim.
Very nice. Robbie, mid-14s for you for the Hereford 5K series?
Possibly a bit quicker, actually, Ben. I'll see how I feel on the day, but might just ease back and take a 14:45 or a 15, you know. But
maybe the first 3K, that is.
Yeah. Well, the way it's going, it's all doom and gloom again for me. I'm nursing my old injury again. So you'd have thought at the same age as Chris Thompson, I'd have learned how to manage these situations. But for the third time in 9 months, I've fallen foul of not reading the signs and struggling with piriformis trouble again. So, all miserable in my world, Ben.
So you probably won't jump into those 5K races, you don't think, at the moment?
Well, yeah, I mean, it can kind of ease off really quickly. I've run once in 9 days, but been using the old turbo bike in the shed to try and stay fit. So if it eases off, I'll still be pretty confident of kind of retaining some fitness. But I think the thing that's putting me off is, I think when you get there, you get funneled in by time and then you go off in timed groups. Mm-hmm. So I don't particularly fancy kind of, you know, just falling off the back of a group and running for 5K I'm not sure. I'll have to assess it really. There's three races, one per month. So yeah. If this month doesn't happen, then I'll just kind of concentrate on getting in the next one.
Kat, I think you've signed up to those Hereford 5K series as well, haven't you?
Yep, that's going to be my first race in over a year. So quite excited to pin a number on and race again. It seems like a long time. So, yeah, hopefully I'm in reasonably good shape. So it should be fun to test out how I go. I got some Vaporflies. They arrived this morning.
There you go.
So that should get me a sub 20.
Join the club.
Yeah.
What colour did you go for, Kat?
They only had one colour left, yeah. But they're these like they're royal blue kind of colour. They're meant to be like the old blue ribbon of design. They are actually beautiful.
Yeah.
I've just been staring at them.
If you go and hammer out a sub 18, Kat, then you might even make a tweet from Tim Hutchins.
Yeah, no. Which of your next events are you racing in this weekend, Ben?
So I've got a half marathon this weekend, a run through event at Kempton Racecourse. I'd sort of made up my mind that I was going to run my full marathon in Alpha Flies, so I'm half tempted to run my half in those, but I think I'll probably stick with the next percent Vapor Flies, and I'll probably just see what sort of color I'm feeling in the morning. I got a few pairs to choose from, sadly. So I'll just go with that.
What's the race plan, Ben?
So sitting here now a few days out, it's just to go out around the 70-minute mark. And if it goes well, that will be great. And I might even sneak under there. If it doesn't go well, it will be a hard effort 3 weeks out of the main event, which is the marathon. So I'm trying to stay fairly level-headed about it and just treat it as a hard effort. But I think I'm in good shape, so just give it a bash and see what happens. Looking forward to it. As Kat said, looking forward to pin a number back on. It's been a while. I think I last raced in October, another run-through event. So it's been a while. As I said in the intro, it was all really about one thing this last couple of weeks. And we all watched the Olympic Marathon Trials, which took place on Friday, the 26th of March at Kew Gardens. We saw elite fields in the men's and women's race. It was all about who would gain Olympic qualification to represent GB in Tokyo this year. So the race started at 8 a.m. There were 27 athletes in total, so quite small fields. Loop course of Kew Gardens. All the talk beforehand was of whether the course was going to be okay, whether it was too twisty, whether the turns were too tight. Seemed to be okay in the end. It was a somewhat windy morning in London, but I think generally speaking, luckily, we're going to be talking more about the athletes and the races themselves rather than anything else such as course or weather, which is probably what we want to be doing. It was live streamed on YouTube and BBC iPlayer. What we're going to do, I'm just going to very quickly run through sort of the highlight. I think most of people listening will probably know what's happened. But in the women's race, it was pretty much a story from Stephanie Davis. After about 90 minutes, Steph Davis broke away from the lead pack, which consisted mostly of athletes like Lily Partridge, Charlotte Arter, Sarah Ingalls, Natasha Cockrum and Becky Briggs. Steph Davis broke away from the pack, looked pretty comfortable doing so. She opened up quite a good gap using a couple of pacemakers to her advantage. And she sort of quickly moved 10 to 15 seconds ahead and finished in a PB of 2:27.16, securing her place at the Tokyo Olympics. So there was lots of talk of Steph Davis being in really good form prior to the event. And I think she demonstrated that. And I think even the commentary team were saying that she had asked for a quicker halfway split than they actually settled on, sort of highlighting that she knew she was in good shape. So 2:27 for Steph Davis. In the men's side of it, only one real big story. And what was an already memorable week for Chris Thompson, who became a father earlier in the week. He then ran a perfectly paced race to win and secured his place on the GB team as a 39-year-old. And it really was a great sort of spectacle to watch. Raw emotion crossing the line the last few hundred meters was just sort of pure joy and emotion. In terms of other men's athletes during the day, so there was pacemaking duo of Callum Hawkins and Jake Smith, and I think we'll probably talk about it. They both looked really comfortable for the whole time that they were running. Bodes well for Callum Hawkins, particularly in the Olympics. They went through 10K in about 30 minutes, 51 seconds. They went through halfway in about 64:45 for the lead pack, at which point we couldn't really see Chris Thompson because he'd sort of fallen off the front group, which consisted of Ben Connor, Mo Arden, Dewey Griffiths, the two pacemakers. But then all of a sudden, the camera sort of flicked back to the lead pack and there was no Dewey Griffiths to be seen. And Chris Thompson was looking as strong as ever in the front pack. And the rest is history, really. If you haven't seen it, I think we'd all sort of highly recommend you jumping onto iPlayer or YouTube and watching that. Certainly the latter half of that men's race, because it really was a good one to watch. So Thompson won in 2:10.52, well inside the qualifying time. He'll now make an Olympic appearance for the first time since competing in the 10,000 metres at London 2012. Ben Connor already had the marathon qualifying standard and he booked his ticket to Tokyo as he came second in 2:12.06. And Callum Hawkins, who we said is pre-selected, and he paced the guys for the first 30K. The top three women, Stephanie Davis, 2:27, Natasha Cockrum, 2:30, and Rosie Edwards, 2:31. So Natasha Cockrum just missing out on the standard. And in the men's, Chris Thompson in 2:10, Ben Connor in 2:12, and Mo Arden in 2:12 as well. Robbie, what was your overall impression of the trials?
I thought it was just a huge success, to be honest. I mean, kind of moving away from the athletes into the event itself. I thought that, to be fair, Tom Bedford and his crew, kind of every decision that I thought he might have got wrong, they kind of pulled off. So from, you know, the couple of weeks before, you can it felt like it could be a bit of a not a disaster, but there was just obviously a lot of talk about the course and the narrow paths and the kind of windy nature of it in the corners and the time. And all of it, I suppose that's to game new players, isn't it? But it turns out it was all quite innovative stuff rather than, mistakes and kind of worth the gamble, if that's what you could call it. So, even the fact it was kind of on a Friday morning, which seemed absolutely bizarre, from my point of view, and I think from kind of all of our point of view while we were talking, while it was going on, it just seemed a really actually good time for it to kind of grip the consciousness of the running community. So it kind of set it apart from kind of anything else that's happened. And yeah, I just thought it was just a massive success. I just thought everything he did, he got it absolutely right. I thought the media around it, he got right, getting the BBC involved and on board. So there were kind of updates on obviously across the BBC and interviews afterwards, and got some runners into the kind of mainstream sporting media that probably wouldn't have been there before. So yeah, absolutely brilliant. Superb.
Yeah, I thought the whole thing was pretty good. The coverage, I think, they did a good job compared to what we could have had. The only criticism on it is the fact that once Steph Davis pulled away from the rest of the field, we didn't really get any coverage of the rest of the race. So it's sort of, and same with Chris Thompson, although I think we all enjoyed that, watching him finish. But it would have been nice just to see any sort of coverage of the women's race other than just watching Steph Davis. But they, there was at least the live updates, but it was just hard to, Natasha Cochrane was so close to running the standard, and I just wanted to know how she was doing all the time, and you only get those updates on the split. So yeah, but in general, it was good coverage. It was better than others.
I definitely agree with that. I think the only kind of downside of the whole kind of event was the fact that the kind of TV coverage just hasn't caught up with, the 21st century, really. I mean, why? I mean, I know we keep saying it, but why they can't use kind of split screens and a bit more kind of progressive kind of technology to keep us updated? I mean, we completely missed Chris Thompson's move. And I'm not saying a split screen would have, definitely captured that, but it would have given a better chance. You'd have thought that they'd have had the opportunity to flick onto it earlier, to the point where once he'd even made his move, it still took the commentary team, a good kind of minute and a half before they realised they were actually kind of watching live footage, and it was in kind of the realised that he'd made a move and it had caught up. So yeah, the only downside is I just don't know why they're not kind of more inventive and more innovative about kind of using that split screen technology when it exists.
Yeah, I thought it was. I agree with everything you've all said. I think it was really good to watch. I still think it probably could have been on the weekend just to get more general sport viewers. I think the only people who were going to dig into iPlayer to watch that were proper running fans. I think to try and get the sport out a bit more, it could have been on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock or something. But other than that, yeah, really good event. I'd definitely like to see more of it in the future, I think. Particularly, obviously, lapped courses are a little bit controversial with turns and stuff like that. But in terms of when we can get and watch these events live in person as a viewing experience, that it works better because you can see the athletes multiple times. I think it could be a real good event moving forward. So yeah, really enjoyed it.
I think another thing we missed, Kat, was until we saw Ben Connor take that final turn, we didn't know if Mo or Ben were gonna get the second spot, which was actually really important as well, because that
Yeah.
determined who was going to the Olympics. And yeah, you saw Ben Connor turn the corner, so then you knew, but it would have been nice to sort of see that. Because then there must have been a battle unfold between those two that we've just not seen. So that would have been good to catch as well. George, overall, hit or miss, do you think?
I think hit overall. Yeah, I agree with what you're just saying. They could have. It doesn't even need to be a split screen. It could be just a mini screen in the corner. That's what they were doing with that triathlon that was on the BBC at the weekend as well. Just something a bit more, other than a couple of blips with the coverage, definitely a hit.
Yeah, you know what I would have liked to see, and we've sort of gone down the complaining route quite quickly, haven't we? But you know what I would have liked to see? Predicted finish times for the athletes, and then where those times would put them in regards to an Olympic standard or a Commonwealth Games standard. So we knew
Yeah.
that these athletes were on pace for an Olympic standard, these athletes weren't, but were on pace for a Commonwealth standard, and these athletes had either off the back or dropped out or something, just to give you a bit more idea about what was unfolding other than just watching that front pack with a stopwatch.
I think the problem is as well is that, like, I mean, I don't know where obviously the commentary team sits. I presume they're just watching the same coverage as what we're watching at home. Literally all you're getting is the information that you can see with your eyes anyway, and kind of nothing else. You're not getting any kind of news on what's going on behind. And, you know, it's as difficult for them to kind of commentate, you know, and give kind of an insightful commentary on it as it is.
But I think we all agree that it probably was a hit and that we would like to see something similar again. Would you agree, Kat? Do you think you'd like to see this sort of format, or do you prefer the selection over the sort of Olympic window, shall we say?
Yeah, well, I've always been more of a fan of actually them being able to select just based on who they want to select rather than these trial races. Because if you look at, I mean, we actually don't have the depth because nobody else, they're going to be left selecting the people that have run the standard. But say Natasha Cockrum had just sneaked in under the standard, they would then be forced to select her. And I think she's great, and I really was rooting for her to get in under the standard. But Charlotte Perdue and Jess Piasecki are much quicker. And if they're forced to pick someone that they know's got a PB, you know, 4 minutes slower than the people they've got just because of who's fit during the trial, it's a great spectacle, and I'd love to see it from a fan's point of view. But actually for selecting the best team to go to the Olympics, I think it needs to be more, for marathons, you need to be able to understand that someone may be injured, but that doesn't mean they're not the best person for the Olympics. As a fan, I'd like to see it go down these trials races because it's exciting. The way they did it was quite good that two were going, but then Johnny Mellors missed out, probably missed out, I'm guessing, by the fact that the other two will be selected. It may not be the best decision. So I'd still like to see the selectors be able to choose who they think will perform at the Olympics, because that was a freak accident that's now cost him a spot when he could be the best person. But then, you know, then you see the emotion of Chris Thompson and you think that makes it great to watch. So
I was going to say, I wonder whether it would be, what would be really good in the future is if they almost got a combination of the two. So they came out kind of before and said they were going to pre-select two and maybe just kind of the first one over the line, obviously with the qualifying time, gets that third place. I think that, you know, if they kind of set that out, you know, now for the next Olympics as a kind of strategy, then it will be kind of a bit more ingrained into kind of people's thinking. So when we get to that time, it's almost like you get that bit of a combination. So you still get that one-off exciting race with the possibility of a Chris Thompson-esque kind of, you know, glory. But then you also get kind of two-thirds of the places are probably going to be fairly picked.
Yeah, I agree. The one that doesn't sit particularly well with me, and I know we've messaged about it, is the Johnny Mellors situation, as you said, Kat. I think the most consistent marathon runner over the last 2 or 3 years, I think I'm right in saying he's got the best PB out of the guys we're talking about. And I sort of messaged you guys in a somewhat provocative question saying, does Johnny Mellors deserve to go to Olympics more than Chris Thompson over sort of a consistent perspective and a PB perspective? And I think you're right. I think that sort of one-off race doesn't sometimes allow for the best people to go, and I think that's fine. And the way in America they seem to get around that is, well, everyone knows the rules, you need to be ready for this race on this day, and this is what's happening. I think it's slightly unfair this year because actually we haven't known the rules for very long. As far as Johnny Mellors knew, he had X amount of time to be ready until recently, so it's not perfect either way, I don't think. So some sort of combination would be perhaps
useful. Actually, Chris Thompson didn't run that far off Johnny Mellors' time. So it's not like the women's race where you're talking 5 minutes difference in the PBs. They are actually close. So it'd be quite unfair on him the other way, really. But
what do you think the difference is between this, the marathon trial? Obviously, the marathon is a much tougher event to prepare for. And this is the same system they use on the track and field events. And like, Laura Muir can have a bad race and finish fourth in the trials and she's not going. So why should the marathon be different would be my point. I think particularly like no, I mean Callum Hawkins maybe, but most British marathon runners aren't really gonna get a medal in the marathon. But so this really for the GB marathon runners, this is their final, I suppose, because this is the event they've got to be at their best for, otherwise they're not going to the Olympics. And then whoever goes to the Olympics, the chances are they're probably not going to medal anyway, which I know that's not how it should be decided, but why would the track have a like different system to the marathon? Would be, should it be equal across the board?
Is it because obviously you need more time to recover for the marathon, haven't you? So obviously the track trials can just be that little bit closer to the Olympics. So I suppose you're a little bit more sure that if somebody runs a quick 10,000 metres or 1,500 metres or 5,000 metres in May, then they're the people that are going to be informed for July. But still feels quite a bit, I mean, you made the point about it, because I thought that Chris Thompson, you know, deserved his place. But then obviously you guys kind of made the point that there was still plenty of time for you know, for fitness to return between kind of now and obviously July.
Yes, I think for the track it's top two automatic if they've got the standard, isn't it? And then third place discretionary, which I've heard like Chris O'Hare talk about before. He wants it to be cutthroat, top three go, tough if not. But I think the discretionary place is good. But obviously the problem with the men's race here is they lost a discretionary place by already picking Callum Hawkins. So maybe what they could have done is, rather for the men's race, rather it be top two go automatically, because we've already lost a spot, top one, and then they could have picked between Connor and Mella. But I suppose, yeah, it's easy to say that in hindsight.
Possibly could happen in the future, but if you see this as kind of an ingrained event going forward for every Olympics, and obviously next time hopefully you'll kind of imagine it with, you know, maybe on the road out on a big city, and it'll be kind of big crowds and that kind of small field, like in an American style format, then, you know, that's got to be good for, ultimately that's got to be good for the sport of running, you know, whether it's fair or not really.
In terms of the Olympic team selection, we thought it would have been announced today. So we are on Tuesday the 30th. So by the time people are listening, it may be that the teams have actually been officially announced. They haven't at the moment. Our best guess, we think, for the women's team would be Stephanie Davis, Jess Piasecki and Charlotte Perdue. And for the men's team, Callum Hawkins, Ben Connor and Chris Thompson. That might not be the final team, but that's our sort of best guess and up from our calculations. Also, there were many athletes who didn't make the Olympic standard, but did run the Commonwealth Games standard for their respective countries. So that included, in the women's side of things, Clara Evans, this week's interviewee, Natasha Cockrum, Rosie Edwards, Rebecca Gentry, Sarah Inglis and Steph Davis, obviously. And on the men, Dowie Griffiths, Joss Griffiths, Mo Odden, Ben Connor and Chris Thompson. There were quite a few dropouts on the day as well for various reasons. Some of the big name dropouts included Lily Partridge, Charlotte Arter, Tom Evans and Matt Clowes. And again, we didn't always see an awful lot of that on the coverage, but sort of post-race announcements, we came to hear about those things.
Just on the dropouts, do you think, obviously people drop out of a marathon like regularly because it's such a hard event to finish, but do you think because you can't run many marathons in a year, two or three, once people know they're not on their best day, they're not going to run the standard, are they just dropping out to save themselves for a big city marathon where they take a bigger paycheck?
I think so. I think you see that more in the marathon, don't you? If it's not your day, and particularly in a race like this where it is just standard or bust. Yeah. Drop out, perhaps save your legs and go again for in the autumn or something sooner. I would think that probably crossed a few minds of the athletes.
Yeah, I have no interest in finishing a marathon. If I set out and it's not going to plan, then I've done it quite a few years where it's not working out, something's gone wrong. And I just think, well, I've done this big block of training, I'll save my legs for the track season. And so I think a lot of them, it just isn't worth it if they're not going to run the standard. What's the point in them getting round in like 2:35, you know, for the women, and just when that's not what they're after, and then having to take a month to recover. So yeah, I think they probably make the right decision at the time. Disappointing though for Lily Partridge and Charlotte Artic. I think they both could have run the standard on a good day.
You even see that on the shorter road races, don't you? When you kind of run the Telford 10K or thinking of the Speedway 10K, which are just kind of designed for more kind of quicker elite runners. And as you go round, the course is kind of littered with dropouts, just purely because as soon as somebody's not going to make the time, they just kind of step off the course, really. It's just absolute waste of energy and kind of a waste of legs if they carry on.
Thanks, guys. Okay, so the only other race news we have, Steph Twell, who actually does have the marathon Olympic standard, but has decided to focus on the 10,000 metres, we believe, for the Olympics, ran a 5,000 metre race on March 21st in Arizona. She said on Instagram it was her first hard effort back, making her return to competitive fitness. Not her fastest time, so I think she came second in a time of 16:20 for 5,000 metres on the track. But she said, managed to get into my first track race since 2019 with an effort over 5K within an early training block, back from rehab and straight down from altitude. That was no easy task, but a start is a start, and I look forward to working to get back to being competitive self again. So Steph Twell back on the road to recovery, and hopefully we'll see her at the 10,000 metre Olympic trials event. So in terms of races looking ahead, a couple of 5,000 metre races to look forward to in the coming days and weeks. George, you're going to take us through the comeback 5,000 metres, which has been announced recently.
Yep, so this is organised by Belgrave Harriers, and it's on Wednesday night, so tomorrow night, 31st of March, at Battersea Park. It's graded 5,000 metre races, two elite races, one men's, one woman's. Been live streamed on YouTube, and they've done something that I think they did in America for the Sound Running invite with Josh Kerr, that the one a few weeks ago, where fans can donate to build the prize fund for the elite race. So you can donate, it's on the Belgrave Harry's Instagram. You can donate £5 or something, and then that goes to the athletes in the elite race based on their finishing position. Two very good elite races. So in the women's elite race, former interviewee Jenny Nesbitt, she's potentially the favourite. She's got the fastest PB, I think, in the field, 15:30. She's run on the track. And the Commonwealth qualifying time is 15:30, so her PB would have been before the standards or the window opened. So that will be her aim. She's ran 9:09 for the 3K this year and 32:33 for the 10K, so appears to be in good form. Also, Danny Chattington's ran 15:53. Gemma Kersey, 16:16. Tara Bage, 16:55. Rebecca Murray, 16:09. And Charlotte Alexander, who's a GB junior, came 49th at World Cross in 2019, under 20s. So that another name to watch out for in the elite women's race. And then in the men's race, I think the fastest in the field is Nick Gulab, who is a Belgrave Harrier. He was at the GB Trials Marathon as a pacemaker. So he's got a Rove PB of 13:27. Adam Clark has a PB of 13:39. Rory Leonard, Loughborough students, and he's got a PB of 14:04. And the European under 23 champ standard is 13:53. So I think he'll be going for that. Mohamed, 13:53. Owen Hines, 13:58. Josh Grace, 13:56. Phil Norman, the steeplechaser, 13:46. So lots of sub 14 in that men's race. And then also Henry McLuckie, he's been training with Mo Farries in under 20. And he ran 14:13 on the road last year. So he'll be going for the European under 20 standard, which is 14:25. And the world under 20 standard, which is 13:55. And just a quick comment about that and British Athletics have a history of not wanting to send people to championships and have not filled spots in the past. So the world under 20 champs this year is in Kenya, and the standard for the 5K is 13:55, which only Alex Yee in the last 30 years has ran that as an under 20, not even Mo Farah. So clearly that's just incredibly quick. They'll say something about, I don't know, shoes making times quicker, but clearly Bridge don't want to send people to Kenya for the World Under 20 Champs. I don't know what you think about that, setting standards ridiculously hard.
It always seems strange to me when full teams aren't sent to any competition, really. I think various reasons are given in terms of medal potential and all that. And I assume it probably comes down to money and funding as the bottom line in lots of cases. But I'm with you. I think if you can send a team of three, then you should send a team of three and or wherever it may be.
Well, hopefully Henry McLuckie, he's 18 seconds outside that on the road last year. So hopefully he can get an understanding and go to Kenya for the World Juniors, which that'd be a pretty cool place to go and run for the under 20 champs.
Another 5K coming up, Robbie. And another friend of the show, Chris Barnes, has organised a podium 5K for April the 3rd. You're going to talk us through the main contenders in the men's and women's field.
So Chris has got kind of jumping back on the racing bandwagon at the earliest opportunity, really. So April the 3rd, and it's another, not quite as innovative as the Comeback 5000 in terms of how the kind of prize pot is worked out. But it's another race where he's kind of advertised that essentially at the sharp end they are racing for money. So he kind of took to social media a few weeks ago basically kind of got people's gauge people's opinions on whether they'd rather pay a reduced entry with no kind of prize money or no decent prize money, or whether everyone would be happy to pay a little bit more and kind of give some decent prize money. So it kind of turns out that pretty much everyone was happy to pay a bit more so that the elite runners would kind of be more attracted to it. The men's, it's a straight £50 to the win. But then if it's a sub 15 and it's a win, it's £100. If it's sub 14, 30, £200. And sub 14 minutes, £300. And sub 13, 45, £500. And then for the women's, £50 straight for the win. If it's a win with sub 16, 30, it's £100. Sub 16, 200. Sub 15, 45, £300. And sub 15, 30, £500. I'm pretty sure from what I can kind of see that he's never done this before. In terms of the contenders for the women, we've got Kate Avery, whose PB is 15:52 from 2018. We've got Revy Walcott Nolan, whose 5K PB is 18:42, but she's almost entirely an 800, 1500 metre runner. So she's actually got an 800 PB of 201 from a couple of years ago. So she's obviously got amazing potential. So she's stepping up to the longer distances. Beth Potter, who's the course record holder, whose PB is 15:24. I presume that was actually on the course as well. That was from last year. Claire Duck, PB 15:51, the lead runner from 2019. Lizzie Bird, 15:53, PB from 2020. And then Mahiri McClellan, the Scottish runner, whose PB is 15:55 from 2019. So there's a few there that will kind of certainly be eyeing at 15:45 and potentially, you know, be hopefully get a few kind of leaning towards 15:30. And then for the men's, we've got Johnny Brownlee, who's coming back. So his PB is 13:46 from last year at podium 5K. So he's actually the quickest athlete in the field. And then we've got Andrew Hayes, 13:47. Johnny Hopkins, 13:54 PB. James Hunt, 13:58. And then we've also got the triathlete Grant Sheldon, whose PB is 13:51 from 2020. So I'd say that there's a fair few group of five runners there who will all be kind of eyeing at the top prize, really, of sub 13:45.
Thanks, Robbie. Just a quick step away from the British interest. A race that's coming up that's caught our eye for obvious reasons is Eliud Kipchoge is to run the Hamburg Marathon, and that will take place on 11th of April. And the tagline for the race is the fastest way to Tokyo. So essentially, this is Eliud Kipchoge's final marathon appearance prior to the Olympic defence. It's an effort to provide another what they call much needed competitive opportunity for athletes to not only run a fast race in the lead-in, but also in many cases to help lots of athletes achieve the qualification standard. The race will take place around the Loop, as we're getting used to, 10.5k city centre course, and it's expected to attract around 100 invited elite athletes. Haven't quite found a start list just yet, but I'm sure there will be one soon. So not that he needs much of an introduction. Kipchoge, he's won 11 of his 13 marathons, got the world record of 201.39, and obviously went sub two in Vienna. He's hoping to become just the third man to win back-to-back Olympic marathon titles in Tokyo. George, will he defend his Olympic marathon title, do you think, come July or August?
Yeah, I do. I think obviously he was a long way back in London in the end and nowhere near his best, but everyone has a bad marathon. That was literally his first bad marathon. So I don't think it's, yeah, can't write him off yet. I don't think he'd necessarily be putting himself through another marathon training block when he's earned more than enough money, and maybe he doesn't want to go out on the top at the top, but I don't think he'd be putting himself through it if he didn't think he still had it. So yeah, I think he'll win in Tokyo.
Kat, I assume there's going to be a female field in Hamburg as well. Not that I've seen much on that. What are your thoughts on Kipchoge, though? Do you think he's going to run well in Hamburg and then again in the Olympics a few months later?
I think he'll run a really average, like 202, 203 or something at Hamburg.
Right.
And then I think Bekele will beat him in the Olympics.
Wow, okay.
but we'll see.
That'd be good to watch. Robbie, what do you think?
Is Bekele definitely, I was going to ask that, is Bekele definitely, is he said that he's going to do it?
Well, staying
for sure.
His problem, whether he's doing it or not, I'd have thought, but.
Getting to the start line might be the issue. I don't know.
I know how he feels, to be honest. Me and Bekele, we're two peas in a pod at the moment.
I think he's in his shed on the turbo at the moment, I saw on Instagram.
Yeah, I've...
Fighting the bees.
Yeah, dealing with a wasp nest underneath. To be honest, yeah, changing the subject from Kipchoge completely, I am keeping half an eye on the warm weather bringing out the bees again, so it could all come to an end. But anyway, Kipchoge, yeah, probably similar lines to Kat, actually. But I think he'll probably get beaten in the Olympics and we'll probably just do enough in Hamburg.
Looking forward to watching him anyway. He's always good to watch, isn't he? And with marathon runners, you don't get many opportunities to watch them, particularly at the peak of their powers. So let's hope he's got another few good ones. I'll hopefully be rooting for him in the Olympics if it comes to another Bekele Kipchoge showdown. So I'll be hoping. I'll be team Kipchoge anyway. I think George is as well. So two versus two there. Kat, back to the UK. Men and women want different cross-country distances is the headline from Athletics Weekly. So this is obviously off the back of that survey we spoke about a lot. Do you want to take us through the latest on that?
Yeah, so this is an article published today by Athletics Weekly, which has been really interesting, goes through the early findings of this survey. And they got 10,000 responses, which is really good. That means people did engage with it. And the most interesting part of it is that women want to race 8K and men want to race 10K, which is what I've always said, is that if it turns out that women want to race one distance and men want to race another, then that's how it should be. And that's what it's come back saying, which is great. And also that women and men do prefer the separate races, which is another thing that I was a bit upset that might get changed. So they've said at the moment they're not going to make that no immediate decision will be made when it comes to racing distances and gender equality over cross country. So that's, for now, they're not about to change it, which is good news, I think, for cross country.
Have we had a response from Run Equal yet, Kat?
I did look at their Facebook page today just to see what their response was. And I mean, to be fair, they continue to make the same points, and really nothing. The only thing that's changed in this coming out is that it is clear that women do want to race the shorter distance and men want to race the longer distance. But ultimately their points are still exactly the same, is that it's not really about what people want. It's about equalising. You know, you can understand their viewpoint's not about to change just because of the survey results. And this doesn't say from my point of view, it's positive. We're not about to have our sport ruined, so it's good.
I can actually see you've written that on there, Kat, as a comment. Fair enough.
I did refrain from commenting.
Okay, that's it, guys. We're in the fortunate but unusual position this time to have two interviews to introduce. We wanted to try and get a good sort of reaction to the Olympic marathon trial. So we've managed to sit down with one athlete from the women's side of things and one athlete from the men's. So Clara Evans will be straight after this pre-show, so you can listen to that. And then next week, we're going to release an interview with Frank Baddick. George is going to sit down with Frank later on in the week, touch wood, and chat about his experience on the day. George, we'll just jump to you first. I know you haven't actually had the interview yet, but do you want to just introduce Frank Baddick for the listeners, which will release next week?
Yeah, so Frank, as we said, he was at the GB Marathon Trials. He ran 2:15:58 in his debut marathon. He runs for Newham and Essex Beagles, and he's my coach at Loughborough University, having gone to Loughborough himself. He's got an incredible range of PBs from 1:49, I think, for the 800. Had lots of success on the track and cross country, and then obviously 2:15 for the marathon, and lots of incredible times in between. So, yeah, really interested to hear from him about how he ran exclusively 800s and 1500s as a junior, and is now moved all the way through and having success on the road. So, really interesting to hear about his marathon build up. I've had a pretty good kind of insight into it anyway, with him being at Loughborough, but training with Tom Evans and Kevin Seawood. So, yeah, it'd be really interesting to hear about his experience and his build up.
And Robbie, you've already sat down with Clara Evans, as we've said. How did you find that chat and that conversation?
Yeah, so obviously really kind of positive and buoyant. Clara sat down with me last night, 3 days after kind of running 2:32. And like you said at the outset of the show, the came fifth in the Olympic trials, which her previous marathon PB was 2:48, which just kind of represents what her... the upturn in her form has been since kind of joining Cardiff in 2018. The race of her life so far, and got a good insight into kind of some of the things that we've been talking about on this episode, just about the course and the build-up and how her race went and how it kind of developed.
So listen, guys, we hope you enjoyed the interviews, and thanks very much for listening as always. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
This week on Track, I'm joined by Cardiff, Wales and GB runner Clara Evans. Clara has kindly agreed to talk to us 3 days after running the fourth fastest marathon for a Welsh woman in history and securing a Commonwealth Games qualifying time in the process at the Kew Gardens Olympic Trials race. Despite Clara still being relatively young for long distance racing, it comes on the back of 16 years racing experience and progression, which has established her firmly at the top table for Great Britain's running scene. Hi, Clara. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you? How's the recovery going?
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me. The recovery's going well. I feel all right, so that's always a good sign.
What does all right mean? Have you been out training since? Has it just been easy running?
No, so I'm on a rest week, so I'm not going to run for the whole week, so I've okay. just been taking my dog out for a walk, so okay. not really doing that'll, much.
that'll be the husky getting plenty of walking then.
Yeah, she just looked at me when I said that as well. I think she's going out now.
You needed to spell it out. I mean, if it's okay, we'll just jump straight into talking about the amazing race last week. Obviously, we were same as the whole kind of running and racing community kind of glued to it on Friday morning, making our excuses with work. I know it's a bit of an open-ended question, but can you kind of talk us through the race from your point of view?
Yes, I think the race went quite well. So I started off with the second pace group, which was like just a bit slower than the Olympic pace. So I thought, I didn't really know, because I've not done marathon since I've got quicker. So I thought, oh, I don't really know what's going to happen. But I thought, oh, my training's gone well, so I might as well just give it a shot and see what happens. And I just stayed with the pacers in that group. And it was going really well. And I was like picking people off who were dropping off the faster group, and I was catching everybody up. So I thought, oh, this is going really well. I felt really strong. And then about 20 miles, my nutrition wasn't so good. And then I started being sick. So that kind of slowed me down a bit. So I was not feeling great towards the end. But
so you were actually physically sick during the race?
Yeah, for maybe 6 or 7 times. Maybe.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I felt really sorry for my pacer Nick, because he had to keep dealing with me being sick. But I just kept going, and because I was like, oh, I'm on for a big PB, and I knew I could get the Commonwealth time, so I just said, oh, I'll just keep going. But it did slow me down a bit, but you know, that's all part and parcel. The gels just didn't sit right with me on the day, and you know, that's just something you have to deal with. And I just had to get to the finish, really. But I was really happy with the time. Getting the Commonwealth standard was the main aim, and I'm really happy I did that.
So that's something that the kind of media coverage didn't pick up at all. You kind of struggling with the sickness in the last few miles. I'm not sure whether you're probably quite happy that they didn't catch you on television. What was your targets going into the race? So was your target to stay with the second group of pacemakers?
Yes, I think the time I was looking to run was about the 2:32, 2:33. And I thought, oh, if I have a good day, maybe I could do a 2:31. But obviously there was a pace group for that, but my boyfriend was actually pacing it. So I thought, oh, I don't want to run two hours with him. So I was like, oh, I spoke to my coach before, and he was like, you've trained at the faster pace. He was like, you know, just give it a shot and see what happens. So yeah, that's just what I did, and I came away with 2:32, so I was really happy.
What was the, because for most of the first 20 miles or so, you were running with Becca Gentry, with Dan Jarvis and Dan Bowker, the pacemakers. What was the kind of dynamic within that group for those miles? Because quite quickly you kind of formed your own little group and everyone else kind of fell off you. Were you kind of issuing instructions to the pacemakers, or were they talking to you through the race?
We didn't really give them any instructions. They just just took it upon themselves. Like, the only instructions was really when we were getting lapped by the guys, they were like, oh, guys behind, let's go to the left after this corner, or you know, just making us aware that there were faster runners coming behind us. And
okay,
that's it really. And they were like, oh, who's taking drinks on this lap or whatever, so we could make sure that if you was taking a drink, you weren't we weren't both on. When there was only the two of us, it was fine anyway. But we had Naomi at the start, and so me and Naomi were taking drinks on opposite laps. So we had to kept I was on the inside, and then we kept swapping around. So they were just kind of just making us aware of our surroundings, and on the first couple of laps of the tight corners and the uneven surfaces and stuff like that.
In the later miles, when the sickness started to hit, was there any point that you thought that you might not end up completing the race, or was it just a case of just pure grit and get through it?
No, I always knew I was going to get through it. I'm quite determined, and I was like, oh no, I'm not giving up. No way, not now. I was finishing the race, no matter what it took. So yeah, no, that didn't even cross my mind.
What were your thoughts on the kind of the whole experience of the day? Because, you know, I mean, it's such a small field with such a kind of heavy media kind of presence and attention. Did you feel like you were at the kind of centre of the running world for a few hours? I mean, what was it like being part of that?
It was really good. To be honest, I didn't really even notice. I didn't really think about that or really pay attention to it. I was just really focused on myself and doing the best that I could do. Kind of just zoned out, really. Like, I don't know, you just see a camera, but you don't really think, oh, who's watching it or anything like that. I just run my pace and see what happens. It was just really great to actually be able to have the race on in the current climate, and you know, just get the opportunity to race, because most people haven't had that opportunity for such a long time. And I think you just feel really grateful that you have had the opportunity to be able to just get a race in.
When did it kind of set in, your achievement of I know you're kind of downplaying it a little bit, but it's the fourth fastest Welsh marathon time in history and obviously qualifying for the Commonwealth Games. When did that start to kind of set in and you realise what you'd accomplished?
To be honest, I still don't think it really has. I guess it would be like when I get back in like the training group and stuff like that, when I meet other people, because I've not seen anyone since I've raced, I kind of just think you're just in your own little bubble. But I think when you start talking to other people then and meeting up with other people, then it kind of is a bit more real. Like, I still don't feel like I've run that time, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like, it's super strange. I just think, oh, I could never run that time, even though I did it on Friday.
almost like an out-of-body experience, kind of happening to somebody else kind of thing.
Yeah, like my coach says I'm quite naive in like terms of like what I can achieve and what I have achieved, and he's always just like, never change, like your naivety is quite a good thing in terms of your athletics.
So next you're, I understand that you're turning to trying to secure the 10,000 meter Commonwealth standard, is that right?
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a try. I've got nothing else to lose, so I'm not really a track runner. I don't really enjoy it that much, but the last one I did in Newport, I actually quite enjoyed it, which
yeah.
Everyone laughs at me now about. So I'm going to try. So I was 19 seconds off, and I think with a bit more experience and being a bit more comfortable running on the track, and see what I can do. But
okay, so what's the qualifying time? Is it 32:30?
Yeah, 32:30. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm hopefully we'll be able to get into the trial race, which is in Birmingham, but
yeah.
Obviously I don't really know much about that, so hopefully my time in Newport will mean I can get in, because I've not been able to get into them before. And then I've seen a couple of other 10,000s advertised, like the English champs, and there's a couple of others going around, so hopefully I'll get a couple of opportunities to do some over the summer, and then I'm going to do another marathon again in the autumn. So that's kind of the plan.
Have you got which marathon are you looking at? Is it London?
I'm not sure yet. I haven't decided. I don't know if I fancy London.
If you do get the qualifying time for the 10,000 meters and you get to make a choice between the marathon and the 10,000 meters, which one will you choose?
I don't know, it's a hard choice, but I think to experience like a major champs on a track will be just really surreal. I think it'd be really amazing. So I think if I got that opportunity, I'd probably, even though it wouldn't be my favorite distance, I don't think I could turn that down. I just think there's something special about that.
Yeah, that's really interesting actually, because obviously it'll be in the new stadium in Birmingham as well.
Yeah.
I think a couple of our other guests over the last couple of months have been talking about how amazing it would be to run the marathon around the kind of streets of Birmingham as opposed to being in the new stadium. So
I think it would be amazing on the streets as well, but I don't know. I just don't think that it's in a, I don't know. I feel like when we watched the Olympics in London and it was just incredible, I feel like it's going to be amazing almost like that. So I just think you can't turn that opportunity down.
Chance to run under the lights of, well, hopefully a big crowd and obviously everyone there supporting.
Definitely.
If we can get a bit of your kind of insight into what's kind of brought you to this point, Clara, and just kind of your running background. And I know you started as you've got a long running background. So your first power event and first power of 10 entry was actually from 2005 as an under 13, which was a 1200 meters race at Briley Hill.
Oh, I think I did a couple more before then, to be honest.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I think so. First one was an 800 metres in Newport, I think, when I was under 11. So
okay.
It was way before Power 10 existed there, I think.
that's when you know you've got a stellar running background, when you predate Power of 10. what kind of got you into running at school age? Was it something that kind of came naturally, or was it something that teachers kind of picked up on?
I was always really into sport, but one of my best friends at school wanted to join the athletics club, and she was like, oh, come along. So my mum was like, yeah, you can go along with her. I just went along, and then she stopped going after a while, but I just carried on. So yeah, I joined when I was in under 11s, and I really wanted to be like a 60 meter sprinter, but my parents were like, no, everyone sprints, so you should do an 800. And yeah, that's how I kind of just got into distance running.
Okay. 800 meters as an 11 year old feels like, you know, kind of 10,000 meters does to an adult, doesn't it? So
yeah, I remember thinking, oh gosh, this is such a long way, like why am I doing it? It was awful.
So am I right in thinking that you were coached by Worcester AC for a bit with Dave Walker?
Yeah, so obviously I was at Hereford when I was under 11, but then when I moved up the age groups into like under 15 and 17, there wasn't really anyone for me to train with. So then another friend who was at the club with me was like, oh, there's this really good group in Worcester, we should go along. So then we just started coming on Tuesdays, and yeah, that's how I met Jenny, and obviously I train with Jenny still now, and I'm still not really friendly with most of the girls and guys from the groups. I used to go every Tuesday over to Worcester. Okay. Which is quite a long way, but
yeah. So during those years, you used to travel all the way from, was it Hereford that you were based in?
Yeah.
Over to Worcester. Okay. And at what point did your kind of potential start to be noticed, and coaches started to talk about you as having that kind of potential to go a bit further?
To be honest, I was never that good when I was younger. I just really enjoyed it, and it was more like the social aspect I just really enjoyed. And it was probably all the same like throughout uni. It probably wasn't until about my current coach, Chris Jones, picked me up about 2 years ago. He started coaching me. So probably wasn't until then. I was probably just like, I was just really a club runner who didn't really take it that seriously. I just really enjoyed it.
Okay. I mean, it was 2018, you joined Cardiff.
Yeah, I think so.
2008, and obviously, like you say, you started working with Chris Jones, who's the Welsh national coach.
Yeah.
So was it kind of, I mean, how did that, I mean, obviously the relationship is really important in your progression. I mean, how did that kind of happen, kind of instantly, or was it a kind of slow, gradual process with Chris?
It was kind of a slow process. He had seen me at a couple of races, local races like half marathons, and I think I came like second or something like that, and Carol Jones won, and that was the year that she was going to the Commonwealth Games, and I wasn't that far behind her. So he was a bit like, he hadn't really heard of me before, and then he just started like chatting to me at events and stuff, and I kind of like was at like a point where I didn't really know what I was doing with my athletics. I was kind of like not really improving, coaching myself, and I was like, oh, like otherwise I'm gonna like quit the sport, or like something else really needs to change. And I just like messaged Chris, and I was like, because I knew he coached Jenny as well, and I was like, oh, do you think you could just help me? And then we kind of just went from there. And at the start it was quite difficult because we're very different. He has like a different coaching style, and you know, I was obviously just setting my ways, but you know, it's been really good. He's really helped me, and I kind of like the way that he does the training, and we've got a really good group with Jenny and Charlotte, and yeah, it's just kind of worked, and he's really helped me progress.
In terms of the kind of transition from coaching yourself to being coached obviously by Chris, I mean, can you shed some light on kind of what the benefits are, and how the benefits have obviously made those improvements for you?
Yeah, so Chris has obviously had a lot of experience behind him, and like coaching yourself is like there's no accountability, which I really quite like. So like if you don't want to do something, you just don't do it, and you're just like, oh. Or if you're like, it's like he's like sets you paces, and you know, if you're tired, he'll like adapt your training, and like he can see, like he comes to our sessions and he sees us run, so he knows like, you know, if things are going good or going bad, or he might be like, oh, you are quite like powerful but you need a bit more aerobic work at the moment, or like vice versa, whereas you don't really see that yourself, and you don't really like look back at your training and think, oh well, I could have done this better, where he's always constantly like analyzing like our training and what we've done, and not just the sessions, but he looks at like just our easy runs and like the heart rates that we run to, and he does a lot of like blood work as well. So there's a lot more science behind it than when I was just training coaching myself. I just had it like a general structure, and I was like, oh, I'll do this today and I'll do that today. Kind of like what I felt like, rather than like working to a goal. So it'll be like a goal race, and then we will have a plan to the goal race. Whereas before it was kind of just, there was goal races, but it was kind of more chaotic maybe.
Yeah, I think chaotic's a good word when you train, when you coach yourself, isn't it? It's a series of kind of decisions that you kind of might make or might not make, and kind of hopefully to the right place.
And you don't always make the right decisions. Like if things aren't going well, he'll like pull you from a session or pull you from a run, whereas you won't make that decision by yourself, because you'll be like, oh no, I should just carry on. Whereas you don't see the benefit of like just calling a session or something a day, because you can do more harm than good, which yeah. I think is quite good to have somebody else just like seeing over you.
And you touched on it there with obviously your training with Jenny Nesbitt and Charlotte Arter, amongst others in that group. I mean, what's the kind of setup like there for you? Are you kind of regulars together and training once or twice a week together?
So they meet twice a week for the session. So obviously I work full time, so I'm not as a regular person, but now we've been working from home, I've been able to link in like for the sessions recently, which I think has really helped me on the build up to this marathon. And like when I did World Half last year, I was on furlough, so basically a professional athlete for a couple of months. So that's really helped me to like progress, I think, because I was only maybe meeting them like once a week if I was lucky, or like sometimes it wasn't even once a week. I'd meet just like them for an easy jog, not in the evening, not for the sessions. But I think really having people there for the harder workouts really makes a difference and helps pull you along and makes you improve.
Obviously you'll be excited to kind of get back to group training over the next few weeks and kind of get back to a bit of normality with the training.
Yeah, but we've been really lucky. So the three of us have been granted elite status by the Welsh government. So we've actually been able to train together. Well, Jenny's been doing, we've not been training with Jenny because she's been training for like 10Ks and 5Ks, where me and Charlotte were training for the marathon. So me and Charlotte have been training together because we've been allowed to. And then we've been meeting up with Jenny for gym work and easy running.
Okay. And some of the successes that you've had since joining Cardiff have been absolutely outstanding. I mean, kind of where do you start really in terms of some of the key kind of performances? From the autumn road relays in 2019, the kind of success as a team to obviously personal success at the World Champs last year for the half marathon. Kind of what stands out for you is in this kind of last 2 or 3 years in terms of maybe your favourite races and the performances that you're most proud of?
So I think probably the Commonwealth Half Marathon, I think in 2018, that's kind of my stand. To me, that's my standout, because I think that was like a turning point for me. I think, I can run with these. I was running over the barrage with Steph Twell, and my dad's there, and my dad was like, what are you doing? Like, I think that was just, made me think, oh wow, this is like incredible, because I don't really see myself as the same caliber as those sort of girls. But when you're running like you're like 6 miles into half marathon with them, I was like, this is just amazing. I couldn't quite believe it. And then maybe road relays, because I remember like for months leading up to it, I kept telling all the people at the club, I was like, we're gonna win road relays, we're gonna win road relays. And everyone was like, Clara, you're just like in a dream world. And I was like, no, if I say it, we're gonna do it. And they were like, okay, if you do it, like, we'll pay for you for a hotel, because it's obviously quite far away. And like, they were like, we'll give you anything you want if you think you're going to win it. And I was like, we are going to win it. I know it. And I was injured just before over the summer. And I was like, the only thing that I was coming back for, I was like, I've got to come back for road relays. I've got to be ready for road relays. I wasn't fully fit, but I was like, no, I'm good enough to race. I'm going to do it. So that was just amazing. It was obviously disappointing that we weren't allowed the medal because we were a Welsh team, but in our hearts, we know we won.
You still won, yeah. I think it's nice to hear, it's always nice to hear it when kind of the elite runners like you guys talk about the road relays, you know, so passionately, because it's something that is just so, you know, for club runners, kind of for every level, it's just such an amazing event, isn't it? So,
yeah, it's a great event, and obviously, so disappointing that we haven't been able to have it again, and we really want to go back and try and defend our title next time it's on.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get that in the autumn. So, and obviously last year the chance to run in Gdynia in Poland for the World Championships half marathon as well. We talked to Samantha Harrison just before that, and obviously it felt like a really big thing at the time. Well, it was a really big thing at the time, but particularly because we were kind of coming out of loads of COVID restrictions, and it was kind of one of the only world kind of championship races that happened really last year. So again, kind of what was your experience around that, and how did you find the event and the race?
The event was really good. It was really well organized and definitely felt COVID secure and everything like that. I didn't have a great race. I just say I had an average race, but I didn't know if I was going to be on the team. I was first reserve for a while, and I knew some of the team were struggling with injuries. So I got told to, you know, keep fit because you might be in the team. But I found that really difficult because it was for like, it was a couple of weeks that I was having to keep fit, and I was supposed to be on my season break. But then I was like, oh, I've got to keep training because I might get in the team. So I found the build up to World Half really quite difficult, because I was like, I might just be training for nothing. And I was getting like, I'd had a long season by then, and I was like, oh, I really need a break. Like, I'm getting quite tired. But I was so happy to get selected, because, well, even a year ago, I definitely wouldn't have thought I'd ever get a GB vest. It was just like a crazy dream. So it was just, yeah, I was just so proud, and I think my family were definitely like super proud, and but they were a bit disappointed that they couldn't come out and watch. But it was quite hard doing a four lap course, and it was quite a hard course. It was a tough day because the pace was so fast as well. But yeah, I'm just so grateful that I managed to get a race and just represent GB. And
yeah, I was going to ask you about the because you recalled it, was it 2 weeks before? So I was going to ask exactly that, whether you kind of had that natural fitness, or whether you were told to kind of maintain the half marathon fitness just on the off chance of kind of being called up. So, I mean, in terms of the experience of the event, I mean, looking back, was it in terms of the COVID security and the travel and the race prep? I mean, how did that feel kind of different at the time? Or was it just another case of just kind of getting your head down and just getting on with it?
You obviously knew it was different, but you kind of just got your head down and got on with it. Obviously there's a lot of waiting around, because you obviously had to have your COVID test when you got there, and then we were like put in a room to wait for our results. So we were, the travel day was like a really long day. Our flight was really early in the morning, I remember, and probably didn't get out of this room to go for our run till like maybe like 6 p.m. and we had left at like 6 a.m. or something. Like, it was such a long day, but you kind of just had to like just relax and go with the flow and just just get on with it really. But you were like, oh, it doesn't matter because I'm at World Half and I'm having this great experience. So it was just like obviously disappointing that you couldn't really have the experience of like after the race, everyone like getting along and like having a drink afterwards, and like, you know, like the bit of a party vibe that you get after a race. It was obviously you didn't really have that aspect of the race, but you know, you're still grateful that you just got the opportunity to just to do a race when nobody else was, and you're allowed to travel when people weren't allowed to travel.
Does it feel like you're going to kind of come out of this hopefully weird kind of COVID world, and because you've potentially kind of elevated such a level in that time, you're going to be kind of thrust into kind of these maybe events with big crowds and, you know, at the kind of obviously the sharp end of it? Has that kind of dawned on you yet, that that's, you know, that's the reality of it now, you know, compared to potentially the races that you've been doing and doing so well in where you obviously can't have the spectators in?
I've not really thought about it, to be honest, but I guess when it happens, it would be nice to have the support. But yeah, I've not really thought about it. I just kind of take every day, every week as it comes, and I don't really think that far in advance about racing.
That's probably the secret to your success, isn't it?
I'm way laid back comparative to everybody else. I think I'm just a bit like away with the fairies, and I don't really think about that sort of stuff.
You've had a couple of really interesting training camps since being with Cardiff. I gather you spent some time in a 10 in Kenya, is that right?
Yeah.
And also in Albuquerque in New Mexico.
Yeah, and then I went to Italy last summer as well.
Okay, brilliant. I mean, I'm really interested to hear about your experiences. You're probably a bit bored of talking about it, really, but in terms of kind of, you know, obviously a 10 and spending your time there, how was that for you?
Oh, I loved it. So I went over Christmas in 2019. So I actually just went with my boyfriend because he runs as well. And so we went over Christmas. We're like, oh, we can get away for longer with less leave from work. So that's why we went over Christmas. But I was a bit apprehensive. But one of the guys who we train with went the year before us and said it was amazing. So we were like, oh, let's just give it a shot, you know. We like to go away and run different places. We're like, well, let's just go. And it was you can't really like explain it. It's incredible. Like, there's so many people out running. You're always with a group, and like, I don't know, it's a great experience. And you meet so many good runners there, like loads of people who I'm still friends with now. And I got to train with like Derek Gray, the Paralympian. I remember I was doing a session with him and Ali Dixon on the track, and I was like, this is just super surreal. And we're getting lapped by like hundreds of Kenyans and we were going so fast on the 200s, but we're just getting lapped. And like Paul Chelimo was on the track at the same time as us. And really? You just see all these like superstars, and like we were out for an easy run one day, and there's this group just ran past us, and my boyfriend Paul was like, oh, that was Mary Catani. And I was like,
really?
What was it? And there, you just see all these like really famous elite runners and all in one. And there's just so many all in one place. And obviously I did the Thursday fartlek, and there's about over 100 runners doing this fartlek on a Thursday morning in this little town. And it's like, it's super surreal.
Oh, wow. So you did the whole early morning, kind of getting up and joining the whole group.
Yeah, definitely. You can train with anyone, like Julian Vonders, like we passed him a couple of times, and a couple of guys met his group and ran with him in the morning. So you'll get up really early in the morning to run at like 6 o'clock, which I don't know why, because it's dark. But they all get up super early to run, and you just run on all these like undulating trails and stuff, and it makes you so strong. Because like there's not a flat bit of road there. Well, you don't run on road; it's all dirt. There's no flat bit. So,
how did you fare on the early morning fartlek? Was it a case of, did you find a good group to run with, or did you find yourself kind of falling off the back, or whereabouts kind of way?
I was about mid pack, I would say, mid to the end. But there was a couple of I think they were French pentathletes. So I was like running with the guy from then, and then a couple of the Kenya women. So there's like you do like a loop, which is like a short lap, and then you like turn right, and there's like an extra bit. So they think they can get like spotted by an agent. So they all work really hard for this short loop, and then if they're getting beaten by you. So when I was going past a couple of them, they were dropping out because they were like, oh, we can't have somebody like a European like me overtaking them, so they were dropping out. But yeah, it was really good fun, although I fell over on like one of the last ones I did, and then I just got trampled by like all these Kenyans, and I was like, oh god, because there's so many of them, you just can't get up. And I was like, oh, and because the floor is like rocky and stuff, oh, it wasn't great.
do you kind of get a real mix of kind of abilities there? Do you, I mean, it sounds a really stupid question, but do you see bad runners, you know, as in
yeah, running. there's a massive mix. So you've got like your elite runners, and then you've got people who are just coming for like maybe a week or two for the experience, and then you've got like everybody in between. So I think as it doesn't matter how good you are, I would definitely recommend everyone to go for the experience. Yeah. It's definitely worth it. And like the lifestyle, because you don't have like, you know, you don't have your internet, because they do have Wi-Fi there, but it's so bad you can barely get on the internet. So it's like a really just like you're kind of detached from the real world almost.
Yeah.
And like everything's just like super basic. Like the food is like, it's good, but it's like proper basic, like home cooking type Kenyan food and just stuff like that.
Yeah. I see. Is it ugali they eat a lot, is it?
Yeah, I had to put so much salt and pepper on that to make it nice. It's like proper bland.
I should probably mention at this point that your boyfriend who you went over there with, that's Paul Graham, isn't it? Who's an elite runner, is obviously in his own right, 29 minute.
I didn't tell him that.
Okay, man. he's still running for Pontypridd, is he? Is he still the chairman there?
Yeah, he is still the chairman. He loves it. He loves all that sort of stuff.
Does he? Okay.
Yeah.
And you ran for Pontypridd for a while between Cardiff and Hereford, is that right?
Yeah, so I was in uni in Ponty, so that's why I joined the club for people to run with. And I still like do a lot for the club, even though I'm not part of it anymore. I always say, oh, I do all the organizing, Paul doesn't do it, it's me. Everyone knows that it's me, because he couldn't do anything if I didn't remind him.
And in terms of kind of looking to kind of the future, and obviously your short-term objective is to get the like we spoke about at the start, the Commonwealth Games standard for the 10,000. What's your kind of long-term objectives?
So hopefully short-term get the standard and then do another marathon. I think just, you know, constantly improving. I stay in the sport because I enjoy it, so just continue enjoying it and see what happens. I don't really set myself I don't really set myself that many goals. So it's all about enjoyment for me. And, you know, if I'm enjoying it, I'll do well. And whatever I happen to achieve is what it is. And I'm grateful for the opportunities and what I can achieve. But I don't really put pressure on myself to achieve anything. Try and continue improving and be the best that I can be. And whatever comes from that will come from that. And I'll enjoy the process and the journey.
That's a great, great, great approach to have, isn't it? And not put too much pressure on yourself. It's obviously working for you as well. So, you know, obviously,
I'm not a professional athlete. I work full time, and you know, it's not my job. I have my day job, which obviously pays my bills, and this is just a hobby on the side that I do. And yeah. I just have done a couple of good things from it.
I mean, is it has it crossed your mind to kind of maybe potentially look at switching from a full-time job and more to being a full-time athlete? Or I mean, I'm not sure if that's a possibility. Is it kind of crossed your mind?
Hopefully I'll be able to go to part-time. So I'm looking into maybe going part-time on the build-up to the Commonwealth Games. So hopefully in a couple of months, if my company will let me. but financially, it's not really an option to not have a job. I've got a mortgage to pay and to do. So, you know, obviously Paul supports me and is supporting me, hopefully going down into part-time. But we're just not in a financial position for me not to work. But obviously if we were, then Paul would support me going full-time while he still worked. So, you know, if it became a viable in the future, then I definitely consider it. But right now it's not a viable option. Otherwise, I probably I'd have to move back in with my parents.
maybe not worth it. I've got to ask as well. I meant to ask at the start, but were you kind of aware of the commotion around the Chris Thompson run? Did you get a chance to kind of rewatch it back afterwards?
Yes. So I rewatched it back on Saturday or Sunday night. Can't remember what day. But I knew he had won when I finished because my bottle person, Finn, who works for Marsh Athletics, was like, oh, every time he was coming around the corner, he was on the grass and they were like, he won. And I was like, he won? Because when he wasn't in the group when I got lapped, he was just on his own. And they were like, oh yeah, he just had an incredible run. And then I watched it back. And
yeah,
I think that's just the marathon, and that's being sensible at the start and trusting your own ability that people are going to come back to you.
So when he came past you, he was just obviously completely on his own.
Yeah, so it's Dewey, Mo and Ben were in the group, I think, and then
yeah.
Chris was a bit behind them on his own. So obviously I only got lapped once, I think maybe it was like 17, 15 miles, something like that. I can't quite remember. The middle-ish of the race. I got lapped. So that was before he started making his charge, I think, on catching them back up. So I kind of like, I knew that they was overtaking me, but I kind of really just didn't take it in, to be honest. I was like, there's so-and-so going past. But it didn't really like register with me. And then they were like, oh yeah, you won. I was like, oh, he was quite far behind, so he must have had a storm in second half. It's the marathon, so anything can happen, so it doesn't really surprise me.
it was a serious kind of experience race from him, wasn't it? It's you know, like exactly like you say, it was a man that knew exactly what he was doing on the day, you know, in terms of his pace. And how did you find the course, by the way?
I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was quite a good course. The wind picked up in the second half, but you know, you can't do anything about the weather or the wind, like it'll be the same on any course. I thought it was a good course. It was relatively fast. You know, it's disappointing that obviously we couldn't have had more spectators, but you know, the guys who were there had like music playing and was cheering us on as much as they could. So, you know, it was the best situation, and it wasn't like the paths were narrow, but they weren't too narrow that it was like dangerous and people were overtaken. So there was plenty of space, and you know, I think it was a great course.
Yeah, because obviously the narrow paths and the corners were kind of big discussion points before the race, but as it turned out, neither seemed to be have any kind of bearing on the race or on any of you guys, really. It just seemed to be kind of flow really well.
Yeah, so I was worried about the corners before, but then when we jogged it the day before, I was actually pleasantly surprised. I was like, oh, this is so much better than what the videos that we've seen were showing. The corners definitely looked worse from the footage that we'd seen, but then when you ran them in person, they were no worse than what I train on in Butte Park and stuff like that. So I was like, it's actually pretty decent. And then in the race, I didn't really notice it, to be honest. There was one sharp corner, but after that corner, you went on to like a straight, which was like a K long. So it really wasn't that bad if you just went wide and then cut back in. So yeah, it was fine.
And this could be the kind of future, really, of racing for a bit, isn't it? Kind of looped courses and kind of contained parks or race tracks or whatever it might be. So are you a fan of the kind of looped kind of course format?
I haven't been, but I'm coming around to the idea after World Half and that marathon. I think it was more like it, I got in my head a bit that I decided that I didn't like it, so I would never run well on it. But it's actually really not that bad. I think it depends on the loop, doesn't it? But if it's the only way, if it's how we can get racing back, then I'm definitely a fan.
Brilliant.
Any way to get racing back for people, I think, you know, I think anyone would take a loop course or anything at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, thank you so much, Clara, for giving up your time. I won't take up too much more of your time. We do like to ask a few quick fire questions at the end of each interview, if that's okay with you. So sorry for putting you on the spot, but I'll fire kind of three or four at you.
Okay, I'm never very good at these.
We can edit out any long pauses, so take your time. Absolutely fine. So the first question is, if you could go for a long run with one athlete, dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I don't know. Probably just, some of the girls who run now, like Steph Twell and stuff like that, because they're just really nice and I find them really inspiring and stuff like that. So, and I think they could give you quite a lot of good advice.
Yeah, brilliant. What's your favourite race that you've ever run? So not just the kind of the year of the race, but your actual kind of favourite event?
Probably road relays. I just love the team aspect because we're such an individual sport, and I think it's great that we get to do a team event, and it's kind of just a different atmosphere to a normal race. It's just way more fun.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. What's your pre-race song for kind of getting race ready?
I really like listening to Little Mix before I race. All about the female empowerment.
Are you sure you want to stick with that? You can give another answer and we can edit that out if you want, Clara.
No, that is, as sad as it is, that is the truth.
My daughter will be impressed anyway. And then finally, track, road or country?
Definitely road, then yeah. Probably track, but I hate cross country. I hate the mud.
Yeah, you need to get racing cross country in America, where there doesn't seem to be any mud on the cross country. So.
Oh yeah, if it's dry, I don't mind it. So we have one down Pembrey, and it's like bone dry because it's on sand dunes, and I love that one. But anything where there's mud, I hate it. I just sink into the mud. I don't know how.
Unfortunately, that's the UK approach to cross country, isn't it? Just make it as muddy and horrible as possible. So we need to get behind some golf courses, I think. And in terms of kind of if our listeners want to kind of follow you and look out for you, but you're obviously on Instagram and Twitter, is that right?
Yeah. Okay. I am Clara Louise and Clara Evans four, because there's four of me, obviously.
Okay, we'll put the links in the episode bio anyway. So, I mean, I know I keep saying it, but thank you so much again for joining us. Like I said, so soon after, probably the biggest race of your life, and massive congratulations from all of us on your superb performance, and kind of most of all, good luck over the coming months.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Clara. Take care.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.